Welcome to episode 21 of the Second Thought podcast. It's Monday, the 20th of April, 2026, and this episode is in response to what was broadcast by the Reverend Jane Manfredi on the 11th of June, 2025. Before we crack on, a content warning. In a few minutes, you'll hear a poem, and that poem features adult themes and adult language. It's brief, but it's there, so if your kids are in earshot, you might want to come back to this one later. Jane apparently does not like John Lennon's Imagine. And on the face of it, that is hardly a surprise. She is an ordained member of the Anglican Church, and the song's lyrics encourage the listener to imagine a world without religion. Kind of a dumb thing for a minister of the church to say, but nowhere near as idiotic as what she goes on to, which reveals a lack of honesty, a willingness to deceive, and an overwhelming lack of imagination, which is very amusing, given the allegations she makes about Lennon's song and what she believes it to mean. Except I don't believe her. I think she's lying, which makes it all a whole lot less forgivable. Worse, as we will come to soon, at one point she hoists her argument with its own petard. I have horrible histories to thank for an explanation of that phrase. A petard was a medieval explosive device designed to blow through the gates during a siege. If, though, that device exploded before the poor soul tasked with setting it had a chance to retreat, he would be blown into the air and likely into bits. He would have been hoisted by his own petard. More hoisting later. Listen to this.
I've never liked John Lennon's Imagine. The opening lyrics always seemed so hopeless to me. Above us, only sky. It's a line which reminds me of the Philip Larkin poem, High Windows, where he looks through the glass at the sky, which shows nothing and is nowhere and is endless.
She doesn't like it because she finds it hopeless? Now, I'm going to imagine that she's smart enough to realise that both John Lennon's Imagine and Philip Larkin's High Windows are bursting with hope. We'll hear the words of both shortly. She's not being honest in her criticism, unless I am gravely overestimating her intelligence. She's obviously entitled to feel however she likes about whatever she likes, but claiming that the lines in Imagine and High Windows to her feel hopeless is a little like me claiming that the lines in Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves feel lacking in optimism. Or like me claiming that the lines of Hazy Shade of Winter by Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel feel like the comfort of a long, warm summer evening. Both are entirely legitimate, but those feelings would suggest I'd either failed to understand the content, or that there was some deeper experience or bias or trauma that had fixed for me a seemingly perverse association with the words. That being the case, it would be a matter of courtesy for me to illuminate the audience so they understood the deviation. Assuming Jane Manfredi does understand the lyrics, for her to find them hopeless would also benefit greatly from an explanation. In the absence of that explanation, the one we find for ourselves in her words is that she is indeed being perverse and indeed self-serving. Whatever her objection, it cannot rationally be to a lack of hope. Perhaps it's to the nature of that hope. Who knows? Lennon and Larkin are writing about hope for a world where Manfredi has no priestly role, a world in which Manfredi's church is consigned to a dustbin of false prophets and forgotten gods. So if not a lack of hope, then seemingly her judgment on what she feels to be the wrong kind of hope? Classy move, Manfredi. But then I may be wrong. John Lennon's message is simple. Larkin's message is more nuanced and open to interpretation. The song and the poem were published just a few years apart, the poem in 1967 and Imagine in 1971, and a cultural revolution was underway in the UK. The role of the church in society was being questioned, prevailing views on what was considered moral were being upended, and both Imagine and High Windows were of this era, and both were deliberately provocative of the established order, deliberately provocative of the church, and deliberately provocative, therefore, of bishops and deacons and priests, just like Jane Manfredi. So it's a little disappointing if all Jane has done his reveal her predictable vulnerability to this provocation. An Anglican minister saying that she doesn't like the lines of John Lennon and Philip Larkin is about as surprising as Liz Truss claiming that she never really liked maths. Manfredi goes on to say,
imagination is a great gift, so if we're going to imagine something, anything, then why not be extravagant?
Holy Mary, Mother of God, she doesn't find the imagination in the poem or the song to be sufficiently extravagant? Now, either she has not been paying attention or she's full of crap, and I very much suspect the latter. Many will be familiar with Lennon's Imagine. It goes, imagine there's no heaven, it's easy if you try, no hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries, it's not hard to do, nothing to kill or die for, no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. There's a little more, but that's the bones of it. Lennon imagines a paradise on earth where we all live in peace, and to achieve this goal, he suggests we shun material wealth, countries, religion, and fear of gods. On war and on religion, Lennon's song was responding to the issues of the day. Imagine was released in 1971. The papers were full of news of the Vietnam War, and little of that news was good. Countries and the reasons they advanced for wars were fair game. Religion, and specifically the Church of England, was also under attack from without as well as from within. It was seen by many as an interfering relic of the past with no guiding value for the present. Worse, the church was associated with the establishment, with the worst elements of the apparatus of monarchy and government. The church sought to impede the objectives of democratically elected leaders as attempts were made to update legislation to reflect new attitudes, and it was deeply criticised by progressive politicians for failing to practice what it preached, for failing to act to help address inequality and poverty and racism. From within the church, the relevance of prevailing theology was debated. This period was the height of the church questioning itself. In 1966, the cover of one edition of Time magazine read, "Is God Dead?" This reflected a school of thought within the church that it needed to redefine itself and its reliance on a supernatural being if it were to continue to exist in any meaningful way. So along with war, religion was a distinctly justifiable target for Lennon. To take the lines out of context and out of their time is deliberately to distort them. Important also to note, Lennon was not making a simplistic claim that the world would be more peaceful without religion. He did see religion as something that contributed to division, but not a causative agent. Humans, he no doubt observed, are adept at making war under any convenient banner, which can conceal whatever the real reasons might be. Hell, we have a US president presenting himself as the Messiah and fighting his Epstein smokescreen war right now in the Middle East. But for Manfredi to criticise Lennon for not having a sufficiently extravagant imagination is laughable. Before examining the imagination at work in the song, we should listen to a little more of what Jane Manfredi had to say.
Theologian Walter Brueggemann, who died last week and was a huge influence on me at Theological College, knew all about the value of imagination and its power to make the world a better place.
For reference, Jane is citing Brueggemann's book, The Prophetic Imagination. You can find a summary of it at secondthoughtforthedaydotcom. In short, The Prophetic Imagination is considered a seminal work of biblical theology. It explores how the Hebrew prophets had the imagination to challenge dominant power structures, providing hope by energizing alternative ways of thinking and living. Jane, does that remind you of anything?
Imagination is a danger, he wrote. Every totalitarian regime is frightened of the artist. You can see why. If you have the means to imagine a more beautiful world, you might start to thirst for it. And if that happens, well, suddenly you have possibility.
Well, yes, of course you have possibility. While Brueggemann may have been a huge influence on Jane at something called Theological College, I'm not sure Jane was really paying a huge amount of attention to what Walter was saying. given though that she plainly quotes from Brueggemann without awareness that it entirely collapses her criticism of John Lennon, I can only imagine she's so blinkered by her faith that she's incapable of imagining that the Christian Church is the totalitarian regime. Despite it being screamingly obvious and plainly put by Brueggemann, Jane saw no parallel with those prophets in John Lennon, challenging the dominant power structures of his day and energizing alternative ways of thinking and living. Lennon was the embodiment of the imagination that Brueggemann claimed was needed for hope. According to Brueggemann's description, John is somewhat obviously the artist, and he was casting religion as part of the oppressive regime. Lennon was imagining a more beautiful world, more beautiful because it was without subservience to gods or to fears of not going to heaven. Claiming that the world would be a better place without religion in the UK today is no more controversial than claiming the world would be a better place without Nigel Farage or Donald Trump. 5 or 6 decades ago, though, the church had only recently begun its long decline in attendance and in relevance. Imagining then a world where the sky was just the sky was liberating. Dare say it was radical. No heaven, no threat of hell for not living the way the church wanted you to live. Just a vast expanse of freedom and opportunity, unencumbered by superstition and unencumbered by a self-appointed morality police. There is no shortage here of imagination. It's just not imagination that Mainfreddie likes. She wants to turn the clock back a few decades to a time when regular church attendance was near universal, when pop stars didn't exist, and when almost no one in public life dared question the church. Jane not liking Imagine says much more about her prejudices and imaginative shortcomings than it does about those of Mr. Lennon. I think it also reveals her willingness to distort history and to distort meaning in the words of Lennon and Larkin to make a petty point of her own, entirely contrary to those intended by the writers. She also reveals a very poor grasp of rhetoric and logic. By introducing Brueggemann's book, she illustrated the fragility of her argument, not its strengths. Brueggemann described the need for people like John Lennon. And if she didn't like Imagine, she was never going to enjoy Philip Larkin's poem, High Windows. Larkin published High Windows in 1967. It was voiced by someone in the latter half of their life, commenting on the freedom and happiness of the new youth, lamenting the lack of this freedom in the youth of his own life. It contemplated the joy of permissive sex, of living a life with no God, with no fear of hell and no need to conceal what you thought of the priest. It is far more provocative than Lennon's Imagine. Here it is, High Windows, read by its author, Philip Larkin.
When I see a couple of kids and guess he's fucking her, she's taking pills or wearing a diaphragm, I know this is paradise everyone old has dreamed of all their lives. Bonds and gestures pushed to one side like an outdated combine harvester. And everyone young going down the long slide to happiness endlessly. I wonder if anyone looked at me 40 years back and thought, that'll be the life. No God anymore, or sweating in the dark about hell and that, or having to hide what you think of the priest. He and his lot will all go down the long slide like free bloody birds. And immediately, rather than words, comes the thought of high windows, the sun-comprehending glass, and beyond it the deep blue air that shows nothing and is nowhere and is endless.
Anglican against Larkin poem brings us right back to Captain Obvious. The essence of the poem, though, is arguably tension and inquiry. Now, the first 4 of the 5 stanzas are about unabated liberty and joy, albeit observed from a distance. The 5th and final part touches ever so lightly on other consequences of that liberty. That last stanza is commonly described as evoking a funeral, one though stripped of fantastical afterlife and ritual. The sky here is not liberty and opportunity as it was for Lennon, but the truth of death, the end of consciousness and the absence of an eternal soul, perhaps the most fearful of concepts for cozy believers in the supernatural. If all you hope for is the comfort of magical outcomes, then I suppose imagine and high windows are hopeless, but through no lack of imagination. The poem invites questions. When freed from religion, the constraints drop away, but do important guardrails also drop away? It becomes necessary to find comfort in new and alien things. Deep blue air that shows nothing and is endless. We gain so much by abandoning centuries in the shadow of an authoritarian church, but do we also lose morality? Without God, do we lose awe? Do we lose purpose? And without God, do we lose meaning? There's also suddenly a vast amount of life and thought that is no longer occupied by church. Can we meaningfully fill it and still live good lives? These are excellent questions, especially were in England in 1967. Now, in an attempt to give her ridiculous claims more credence, Jane also sought to ground them in an apparent need for people to escape the endless suffocating news of tragedy from around the world.
When we exist in a harmful feedback loop of cynicism and despair, we lose the ability to imagine that things can be any different. This is what it's like to live with no hope. I think we're living in such times right now, where many of us are numb to the possibility of change. It's all so awful, we say. And when imagination dies, so does hope.
She is now up to her neck in groundless claims and ill-applied generalisations. She can think what she likes about what is in the minds of others, but to suggest that they have no hope is insulting, and to suggest imagination has died is insulting. She might feel hopeless, but that's no reason for her to project her hopelessness on anyone else.
John Lennon imagined there was no heaven, but imagine if there was. Imagine if the kingdom of heaven was here on earth, right now, just as Jesus said it was, providing a challenge and an alternative perspective to the dominant culture around us.
And there it is, hoisted by her own petard. John Lennon was imagining what he thought would be a paradise on earth, one that challenged the prevailing culture. And here we have Jane Manfredi imagining what she thought would be a paradise on earth, one that challenged the prevailing culture. Do I need to reconsider that comment about Manfredi's intelligence? Clearly, it is not a lack of hope to which she objects, and given that both Lennon and Manfredi are imagining effectively different flavours of the same thing, it's also not a lack of imagination to which she objects. Manfredi is being dishonest. She's also being manipulative and deceitful. And she does it when she mentions heaven. You'll see there's a focus in this from her on heaven. And I think she's being, at best, disingenuous. Heaven is a lovely thing, she says. Why wouldn't you want it? I think this is a big clue to why she might think to claim hopelessness for Lennon's words and why she failed to spot all the obvious flaws in her own argument. For millions, this religion in 1971 was not about the promise of eternal life doing God's bidding in heaven. It was about the threat of an eternal life in hell. Any mention of heaven would be received through the filter of that threat, a threat of which the church made great play in its evangelism and in its morality. Threat and guilt to achieve moral objectives. No wonder the church was in trouble. For the compliant, obedient congregant, certain of their place among the saints, sure, a mention of heaven would no doubt invoke nothing but the comfort they could look forward to in an eternity of trumpeting angels. But Jane then fails to imagine the harrowing existence of millions of others with lively, curious minds that had not yet dismissed the idea of God, but they were attempting to make sense of the many contradictions, and they were desperately worried that they'd never tick all the boxes required for heavenly admission. Indeed, no doubt being preached at about those shortcomings, living in constant fear of eternal torture, heaven was nothing but a trigger for these fears. If you can walk a mile in the other person's shoes, Jane, you might be able to imagine the relief for these millions of deep blue sky that shows nothing and is nowhere and is endless. The failure of imagination is all Jane's. Now, it was mean-spirited of her to deny hope in the words of Lennon and Larkin. And this was not a reflection from a religious perspective on people and events in the news. It was self-serving and it was manipulative. And apparently it was motivated by reactionary desperation, by a desire to retreat to an age when her church had relevance and authority and the power to silence detractors. It was also a cynical attempt to slight the words of artists and thinkers with whom she just happens to disagree. She would do well to listen to Thought for the Day from the 11th of April 2025, which was by Rabbi Ephraim Mervis, on why it is vital to defend the truth of history. Now, Mervis was celebrating an anniversary of the legal defeat of a Holocaust denier, David Irvin. But I'm sure he'd not distinguish too much between the big lies of a Holocaust denier and the smaller lies of cultist propaganda. Thank you for listening to the Second Thought podcast. For show notes and transcripts and links, please visit secondthoughtfortheday.com. That's secondthoughtfortheday.com.